From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. What comes to mind when you hear millennials? Entitled, technology-obsessed, dynamic generation of changemakers? Even the millennial age range is a matter of dispute. Well, we're going to go with the authors who coined the term and refer to people born between 1982 and 2000. And rather than follow the trail of demographic cliches, we've got a couple of genuine Georgia millennials with us to talk about their lives and what matters to them. Coco Poppy joins us now from Savannah. She is a community organizer. Hello, Coco.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. And Caleb Logan is also here with us in the studio. He's a sociology major, just graduated from Oglethorpe University. Hello, Caleb.
Hi.
And Anshul Gupta is also here. He studies computer science and economics at Stanford. Good morning.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. So we get the cliches, right? The almond milk, beard oil, selfie and self-obsessed. Why do millennials get such a bad rap? Caleb, I'm looking right at you.
I actually used beard oil this morning. That's so funny.
Okay, so we've earned it.
I personally think millennials get such a bad rap because we consume things differently, whether it's, you know, the economy or technology or media. And it's just so different than our predecessors. And I think often our knee-jerk reaction is if we don't understand it, then we'll just critique it and, you know, be super harsh on it. So I think that's kind of where millennials are. We're in that transition period and we're getting critiqued for a lot of things.
Spoken like a true sociology major, I have to say. What do you think, Anshul?
Well, I guess as I'm computer science from the more technical side, it's with how fast technology has been progressing and changing. Millennials are used to very rapid change. And I think as a result, one of the things that millennials get a bad rap for in the workplace is that they're constantly looking to move to a different industry or they constantly want to move up the ladder. But when you're used to such quick and rapid change and innovation, you sort of are always looking for the next opportunity, as similar to how we look and wait for the next iPhone or the next Xbox or whatever it may be.
Oh, so interesting. Coco, what do you think?
So I think what's really interesting is that every generation is really subject to being the reason for a moral or cultural panic. Every generation has been in the position of being critiqued. Every generation is now sort of in the position of doing the critiquing. And so for most of us, I always kind of want to give like a little bit of a historical context to that, because it wasn't too long ago where, you know, my father, who is very much a baby boomer, was the reason that America was declining because he had long hair and he was burning his draft card. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. I mean, right? It's always been this way. I'm sure the greatest generation was looking at them and thinking, what? But is any of it deserved?
Tricky.
Yeah, it's TLDR. It's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. Like, again, like I think the issue is that sometimes it's really easy to just put a group of folks into a monolith and then scapegoat, right? Again, like going back to historical trends, like it's something we're really good at. And so, again, like millennials are not a monolith. Like we encompass all sorts of different experiences and ways of living. And we're just, I think, like, looking at it through the frame of race and gender and sexuality and economic status. Like, I think these are all really important things to take into consideration when we're having this conversation. And instead of just being kind of intellectually lazy and being like, millennials like avocado toast, that's why they can't afford a home, right? Like, that's so intellectually lazy.
Absolutely. Well, I want to pick up on what Anshul said, because that rapid change in your lifetime, you know, how we live, the jobs we do, is so different than it was even 20 years ago. But now the U.S. Census data counts millennials as 40% of the unemployed workforce. So you're in tech, you're in economics at Stanford, which is like the technology epicenter. Do you have any anxiety about finding a job in the future?
I mean, I'm not too concerned, but I think going back to the 40% unemployment rate, part of that is due to the fact that a lot of us may be in college or in graduate school, so that may be a sort of a mitigating factor or an exacerbating factor in terms of raising the unemployment rate. But, I mean, once again, it sort of comes down to the fact that it just depends on how the economy is at the time. So a lot of millennials grew up in the 2007 recession, so hopefully, or during the 2007 crash and the recession, so hopefully that made some of those individuals, or some of us, rather, more aware of, you know, how risky it may be. But right now, we're in good times, so I don't think there's necessarily too much concern about getting that job.
Well, and Caleb, you've just graduated with a sociology and education degree. English minor. So how's the sociology job market looking?
I think I think with my generation, a lot of it is very research heavy. So if you're not interested in going into kind of a heavy research job right out of college, it's a little tricky. But I think going back to that idea of us moving rapidly and learning rapidly, I think a lot of people in my generation are actually using their major for something that maybe has never been thought of.
Right.
So I know like sociology in the public health sector is growing, or a lot of celebrities are now hiring sociologists to make sure they don't say anything problematic on Twitter.
Wow.
So, you know, I think our generation is very innovative and kind of finding ways to use their major.
Now, Coco, for you, paying back student loans, this is a big concern. And a lot of people have said people don't become activists because they have to get a job that pays. Does that worry you?
Oh, my God. I could speak personally on that. So when I think I'm a little bit on the older end of the millennial spectrum. So I'm 33. I graduated college in 2008, right as America kind of ran smack into the face of one of the largest recessions we've ever experienced. And so when people ask me, what did I do with my time when I was living in New York before I came back down to Georgia? I said, I did whatever I could to get by and pay my bills. Right. So I think that's a real reality a lot of people are having to face. And I think millennials specifically, we're navigating a changing job market. And I think something to the last point you were kind of talking about, we don't really measure gig economy impact and we don't measure freelance numbers.
So like the Uber or Airbnb making your money in this sort of gig economy moment by moment, job by job.
Right. And so Georgia specifically does not really have data on those numbers. So what could be unemployment numbers might actually, if we measured it correctly, could be freelance gigs, gig economy. I think just this whole other world of working opportunities that we're really not sort of paying attention to in the way that we need to.
Well, that dynamism, generation innovation is what millennials are called, change makers. And different from the anti-war marches or the civil rights protests that characterize resistance and protests during the boomer years. So what about activism now? What are some of the issues that you care about? Who wants to pick that up?
Good question. I think this is something I was talking to my friends about just yesterday. There's just so much content that I think a lot of millennials will tell you that they're interested in all kinds of things. You know, LGBTQ plus rights, animal rights, what Kim Kardashian has on, just all types of things at one time. And I think that's both exceptional, but also limiting in a way, because we can't quite have like a civil rights movement where everyone focuses on one thing.
But you do have social media. You have your own personal megaphone or a zillion personal
megaphones
out there.
Exactly.
But is that liking a post on Facebook or following something? Is that activism today? Coco, maybe this is for you.
No, I mean, social media is a tool, right? It's a tool it's a neutral tool, and it can be used for good. It can be used for bad. So I think it's really what we're deciding to do with that tool. Just because you post on Facebook that you're a MAD does not make you an activist, right? Like, what is the follow-up action? Are you going out to march? Are you writing your local representation? Are you helping organize locally? Like, what else are you doing, right? So I think that's the challenge I would sort of put forward. I think also too, the thing to remember is, and what we were really just talking about is like, I don't think millennials really feel that we can frame things in just one lens, right? It's going back to this whole idea of having an intersectional lens. Like we do not have the privilege to look at things as a one issue cause. We have to look at the whole spectrum of how this affects everyone, right? And I think something too that is really exciting to watch is the amount of millennials that are now running for political office or serving in political office. You know, Mariah Parker in Athens, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who just beat out a 10-seat Democrat, right? Sorry about that. Bea Nugan, Ted Terry, the Parkland students now going on this voting tour. Like, we are doing some really amazing political work that I think needs to be commended and lifted up, right?
Yeah, and picking up on that the layers of information, the sources of information coming from so many different places. But let's talk a little bit about how you consume media. Mm-hmm. First, we've got, you know, a fake news kind of, let's say, epidemic going on right now. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And we've identified a lot of sources. But how about for you? Most millennials do consume, statistically, their media and news from other people. It's shared with you. So how important is it for you to verify that? Is that something, Anshul, that you take into account?
Yeah, definitely. And sort of, I feel like I'm one of the people that ends up sharing it with other people. So I try to get my news from a variety of sources, whether that's if it's more economics, Wall Street Journal or TechCrunch, if it's, you know, the tech area. But then also you bring in information from Twitter and Facebook if you follow the news stations. And then also on my way to work, try to listen to 88.5, 90.1, whatever station it may be, to get more information, more news in, and then discuss it with other people and things of that nature.
Has anyone ever forwarded a story without verifying or reading it all the way through?
Absolutely.
Of course.
And I think something that's important to note is, as a minority, I think a lot of times the reason why myself in particular depends on like a Twitter for my news source is because you automatically get kind of a more streamlined approach. You know, you have people who will pick out kind of the information that's necessary to you as an African-American or as a queer person, because the news isn't always tailored to us. So we kind of do it ourselves on social media. So while I would like to say that I fact checked everything, a lot of times it's a simple scroll through Twitter, or I have like this 1 minute news app that'll send to my phone, just kind of in bits and nuggets to what's important to me.
Caleb Logan there. He's a sociology major at Oglethorpe University, just graduated. Also with us on the line, Coco Papi, a community organizer from Savannah, and Anshul Gupta, studies computer science and economics at Stanford. They are not officially representing for the Millennial Board of the United States of America, but this is a demographic that is often talked about and not often talked with. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to some news stories, because this has been, you know, week after week, there are lots of news, but big story today, murder of five journalists from Capital Gazette Community Newspaper. This was in Annapolis, Maryland yesterday. Hearts go out to their families. How many mass shootings, however, can you remember growing up? And can you even begin to count? Right. Coco?
I mean, I think the one that specifically stands out in my mind was Columbine, right? So, like, that was, for me, that was really kind of where my sort of consciousness for this came in. And I think I was, like, 13 or 12 when that happened. And I think the more disturbing thing is, if you were to ask me all the mass shootings that have happened this year, I really can't give you that number.
Well, that's a thing.
So many.
The idea that you grew up in an area that has become desensitized mm-hmm. to violence, desensitized to this kind of bad news, is, do you feel like that's true?
I think consciousness was a good word. I can't remember a time in school where, you know, school shootings and tragedies like that weren't on just all students' consciousness. I think that if you asked a lot of people, you know, that was a worry in the back of our heads just growing up. It was just something you grew up with. Mm-hmm. So I think it's less desensitized and more just learning how to live with that fear kind of at the back of your head, which mm-hmm. is so sad, so yeah. tragic.
It is. It's a horrible thing. Also, you've also come of age when immigration policy has been shifting. And of course, the news, the separation of children from their parents crossing the border. How did that hit you?
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think any time that you put people in camps, like we're setting ourselves up for a bad situation, right? And again, like, we need to look at our history, right? This is not anything new. America has a history of separating families, specifically indigenous families, African-American families, Japanese families during internment. And we haven't learned from our history, right? Like, we really haven't learned that othering folks out of a place of fear is not how we change things, right? It's sort of the thing that ends up damning us over and over.
I want to get a sense of your response to the announcement that Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy retiring, that came out this week. Does this register for you?
Yeah, I mean, with Kennedy, the thing to notice is that Kennedy was appointed, I believe, by Reagan. Mm-hmm. So for him, it was strategic to probably resign under a Republican administration. And the other thing is with midterms coming up and there's uncertainty about whether Democrats may take over the Senate or not, it's strategic for him to also resign now during this time period so that they can maybe get a replacement in. But in terms of the effect on policy going forward, he was generally considered a swing voter in terms of siding more liberal on social issues and then more conservative on economic issues. And it's pretty likely that if Republicans can retain hold of the Senate and they have the 51 votes or 50 votes with Pence breaking the tie, in addition to being able to nominate a more conservative justice, it's going to have a pretty big pretty big impact on all kinds of decisions going forward with the 5-4 vote leaning more conservative across the board.
You've really thought this through. How about other issues, you know, that we hear about? Healthcare, Social Security, something that we don't generally assume or is not generally assumed that young people care about. Does that register with you, Caleb?
Definitely. I think we just, come back full circle, I think we just register in a different way. It's more in a collaborative, speaking with each other through social media, speaking with each other in think tanks, group talks. That's kind of how we digest those things. And then back to the Supreme Court justice, I think, you know, we've taken for granted a lot of these decisions that were, you know, so monumental and huge. And now that there's a chance that they can be rolled back or that we can have a more conservative leaning justice, millennials are starting to think about these things, these huge monumental decisions that were made before our lifetime.
Do you all vote?
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Why would y'all don't vote?
Well, do your friends vote?
I think now my friends vote. I think before our current administration, our current president, my friends were very laissez-faire about it, kind of we'll do it if we're close to the polling location. But I think this last election was really a wake-up call for a lot of people in our age group. And now my friends vote every time they have a chance. So maybe some good came of everything.
Do you all believe that your generation can change the world? Do you want to? Is that even an aspiration? They're nodding here. I can't see you, Coco.
I mean, I think I don't think we really have a choice. Do you get what I mean? I think even if you have really nothing to lose, you still have something to lose, right? And I think we don't really have the privilege to sit back and kind of hope for the best, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but when Justice Kennedy announced that he was retiring, I don't know a single woman under the age of 36 who didn't completely freak out because we know what's at risk, right? I don't know a single person of color who wasn't like,
Cannot say that on the radio, my friend.
Sorry. what will happen with voting rights?
Well, that is Coco Papi. She's a community organizer from Savannah. Caleb Logan also with me, sociology major at Oglethorpe, and Anshul Gupta. He studies computer science and economics at Stanford. Thank you so much for representing today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. On Second Thought is produced by Fenley Foxen, Summer Evans, Leighton Rowell, and LaRaven Taylor. Tyler Morris is our technical and musical director. Susan Davis is our executive producer. Have a great weekend. I'm Virginia Prescott. This is On Second Thought.